The Association for Diplomatic Studies and Training, or ADST, is an independent nonprofit organization founded in 1986. Located at the State Department's George P. Shultz National Foreign Affairs Training Center in Arlington, Virginia, ADST advances understanding of American diplomacy and supports training of foreign affairs personnel through a variety of programs and activities. Over the past quarter century, ADST has conducted more than 1,800 oral histories, which are also posted on the Library of Congress website, with more to come. For more information on ADST and our oral histories, please visit www.adst.org. The following podcast contains part 3 of 3 of Kathleen Turner's 2012 oral history interview.
When you went to London, you were there for...
4 years, 68 to 72.
How did you find, you went to an American school, but was this different than, it was a pretty good school?
Well, I was lucky enough to be part of an experiment with that school. First of all, let me say that the first thing my older brother and I did when we got to London was jump on the underground and just move, just travel. We were liberated, we could not go anywhere before in our lives without someone taking us, knowing where we were, deciding when we were leaving. Wow! I think we must have scared the hell out of my mother. But we just, got a ticket and just rode the subways and just the underground until we felt free, And of course, this transit system in London is fabulous. You don't ever need a car, at least so. And this is one reason I brought my daughter up in New York City, is because I think, at 12, you get a bus pass, you get the Metro card. And that sense of being able to take yourself places is so important to confidence, to a sense of who you are and your capabilities. I could never bring up a child in Los Angeles, and never would have, never did. In any case, that was what we had in London, the ability to move ourselves around. Now, we moved up to Hampstead, garden suburbs above Hampstead Heath. So our options were to walk across the Heath, basically, to get the Northern Line at Hampstead and take that down. Or to walk to this island and get a bus to any case. The first year we were there, the American school was under construction. They were rebuilding the whole thing. So we shared a school called the Working Men's College in Camden Town, which was not a nice area then at all. But we had it during the day, and then the Working Men's College was there at night. And I can remember, we walked to and from the tube in groups, because it really was. And they didn't necessarily like, little white rich Americans very much.
I can imagine it.
It was a little hairy there. And that was only a year. When the American school was finished in St. John's Wood, they wanted to do a very experimental sort of program, where they designed a course of study that a good student, working hard and responsibly, could finish the week's requirement by Wednesday night. So that would give you 2 days to decide your own course of study. And if you got 7 to 10 students together, you could, and designed a class you wanted, they would provide the teaching. This was, unheard of. And then we had no closed rooms. They were all pods that opened onto a central location, which the teachers actually grew to hate because it was too noisy.
My wife's a teacher.
Didn't like that. No. Anyway. But, we had, in a school of 400, we had 50-some English courses because somebody just wanted to do Chaucer and go around London to all the, this kind of thing. It was just, it didn't work. It didn't work. We lasted about a year, and too many kids were not doing the work. And they felt that they needed to, we had to go back to the constant supervision. You know, to me it was like, oh hell, I loved it. You know, I absolutely loved it. But
well, had the acting bug bitten you, or when?
Oh yes.
When did this hit you?
When I was in Venezuela, which makes absolutely no sense.
Oh, yeah,
but I was 12. But I'd never been to a theater performance. You know, when we lived here in Washington, when I was in second and third grade, my mother took me to the ballet once. And that was the only real live performance I'd ever seen. So why? I was just a voracious reader. And I was always reading plays out loud and would enlist my brothers and sisters to, you know, say other, do other roles and things. You made a lot of your own entertainment, you know, in those days.
Yes, we used to do play reading. And,
yeah.
You know, it's one of the things the families would get together and do play reading.
Something like that, but we kind of did it on for me. But in any case, I remember when I was 12, you know, saying to my mom, well, I'm going to be an actress. And they just thought this was real cute, you know. But then when we moved to London, of course, I had access to theater. And the first night we were there, I snuck out, and I snuck into a theater, went up to the gods, you know. And, and I think it was Angela Lansbury and Mame. And I remember sitting up there, and you're almost afraid that you're going to fall over, you know, and fall off the balcony. It's so high and so steep. But I remember thinking back, oh my God, I could earn my living this way. Because we all knew we'd have to earn our living. There was no money that we were going to inherit or anything like that. So any career we chose had to support us. Which was my father's objection. You know, he couldn't see any way that this would ever work out so that I would be safe and secure financially. You know?
Yeah.
Which, as a parent, I completely understand. But he was wrong. You know, they were both wrong. And it took years for my mother to confess, you know, to... But
you know, I was wondering whether you felt there was something in the water or something.
Many actors actually come from a similar background. If it's not foreign service, it's where they have been moved to other countries or different schools a lot. Had to adapt and compensate for being the new kid all the time or something. And I think you learn how to present yourself. You know, you go to a new school. And again, I can remember when I moved from Venezuela to London, thinking, oh, I have a chance to reinvent myself. Because nobody there will know me from the years before. So whoever I say I am to these people, you know. Which I thought was quite heady. I mean, not that I was going to lie, but I just wasn't carrying any baggage.
Yeah. Well, did you find that that there were lots of opportunities for trying things on? I mean, you know, skits or anything like that, or was this a matter of observing?
Well, I had a great, we had seven kids in high school at ASL. And we wrote, directed, produced everything, you know, acted everything. And we would put on play after play after play. The school was very supportive. We hated this one drama teacher. We got him fired and got another one. And we traveled to Paris, to other international schools with productions. And I think, you know, one of the most thrilling things about being based in London was how easily you could just go to the continent. You know, my older brother and I would get down to Paddington, take a train, and cross to Amsterdam. You know, we had my father had a sort of an honorary aunt who lived in Amsterdam, who we'd show up at the Heron's Klat at her door. You know, and say, you know, can we stay here tonight? And it was we had that kind of freedom, you know, just to go to Paris. On a few francs. I mean, it wasn't a big deal, and you didn't expect to stay in a nice hotel or anything like that. You know, but you could buy a baguette and some cheese and hang out. And I mean, Come on, that's just extraordinary.
But did you say your father was not, didn't feel this was a the road for success?
No, he was very, very against it. Also because I think he felt that it was a very dubious profession, you know, that young ladies did not go into acting, that this was, you know, just one step above a streetwalker here, you know. But I can remember that my mother, I was doing Brian Friel's plays, The Winners and Losers, at ASL, at the school. It was a beautiful piece. I'll have to direct that one day. Anyway, and my father drove my mother to the school, and he stayed in the car because he would not give the tacit approval of coming in. So, I mean, it was incredibly foolish. He never saw me. Very foolish. But my mother said she went out at the intermission, you know, to say, she, you know, it's going very well. She's doing very well. And he was sitting there with his hands clenched on the steering wheel. No, idiot.
Well, did he and your mother see plays and things of this nature?
Oh, once we got to London, yeah.
Yeah.
Not as much as I did, but yes. And theater, frankly, was cheaper than movies. You know, I mean, it was great. You could just, I could go to a play almost, you know, twice a week at least.
While you were doing all this, were you much of a reader?
Huge. I am. I still am. I must read at least four books a week.
In the early years, what sort of things were you reading? Can you think of any?
Oh, well, I read a lot of historical drama. I'm very attracted by history and that sort of thing. I mean, for example, right now I'm reading Ken Follett's second book of the century, you know, the one that's about just before World War II.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, boy, his work is so good. In any case. So I'm still drawn to all of that. But I read a lot of poetry. I read every piece of Shakespeare I could, you know, obviously get my hands on. And I've recorded many, many pieces there. It wasn't until, and this is an interesting coincidence that just occurred to me. It wasn't until I moved back to Missouri, or was forced back to Missouri, to be more accurate, that I got fascinated by science fiction. And I think it's because I really wanted an alternate world, you know? I really didn't want to be where I was. So, yeah, then I got hooked on science fiction, which I love too, you know?
Well, great thing. I've used this to get the hell out of where I am. Did you run across any anti-Americanism or
tremendous
problems?
Well, in Venezuela, there was a group called the FRALN. And what they did was they would target American houses, very often the embassy staff. And they didn't kill anybody. They'd come in and tie up anybody in the house, and then they'd spray paint the house, you know, with their initials and things like that, and tear furniture up and all this kind of stuff. But then in Venezuela, everyone, not just, you know, Americans or anything like that, everyone lived in fortified homes. There were huge fences, there were bars on every window, there was broken glass on every perimeter wall. You know, it was just, that's how everyone lived.
Was there a safe room and all that?
No. No, no. We were never attacked, my family. But there was, yes, there was, I mean, this was toward the end of our stay there. Again, when there was talk starting about nationalizing the oil and things like that. But it was the anti-British sentiment at that time was almost greater because of Shell. You know, Shell owned the major interests in the oil fields out west, so they were more targeted than we were, in fact. In London, no. I remember at one point, it must have been 71, when Nixon went into Cambodia. By then I was quite political, yeah. And we put together a march, and we got permission to go down Oxford Street into the embassy, into North Audley Street in Grosvenor Square, and then to meet at Hyde Park Corner afterwards. Well, my father was, you know, said, "You're not doing this," you know. And of course, I was one of the organizers. And I said, "Yes, I am," you know, and we had a really huge fight. And he said, "All right, now I ask you this. Do not go in front of the embassy." He said, leave the march at North Audley Street, let it, and then rejoin it to go to Hyde Park. But please, do not come and stand in front of the embassy. I can't bear it." I said, "Well, of course. You know, of course I won't." And I didn't. I mean, to respect his wishes, and he felt, you know.
Well, I know time is moving on. Looking back on it, did you find your Foreign Service experiences translated into any of the delightful movies I've seen of you, and stage things? Was there any transference there of sort of the Foreign Service?
Well, my education, for heaven's sakes. I mean, whether it's, obviously the Spanish came in very handy in Romancing the Stone,
yes.
And French came in rather handy in Jewel of the Nile. We were in Morocco and the south of France. I think what it really gave me was an extraordinary edge on many, many American actors, many born and bred American actors. I had a greater breadth of knowledge. I had a greater depth of language, both English and others. I had so much more experience that when I would see a piece of writing, I did not go for the cliché, for the expected interpretation or response, because my whole history didn't necessarily include the expected response. And I think that was always very powerful to have someone who had seemingly a unique interpretation of everything, simply because they saw the same thing over and over and over, because all the people came from the same backgrounds, you know. And so having such a different upbringing for this country, I think, worked hugely in my favor. Mm-hmm. Yes?
I'm thinking, obviously, anybody interviewing you comes back to body heat at some time.
Oh, yes.
I can't help this. But to me, it seems interesting that William Hurt is also a Foreign Service kid.
Yeah, he is.
And all I can say is...
He didn't serve outside the country much, because the marriage didn't last.
But still, two Foreign Service kids put into a difficult social system.
Well, you know, this is 31 years ago. The film is 31 years old now. And we knew we were breaking ground. I mean, we knew we were pushing the limits. But we didn't realize, I don't think anyone realized, you know, that it would be such
an indelible thing. The thing is, it's a good movie.
Yes.
You know, I mean, some of these things...
Well, if you look at it, all my movies are good movies.
Yeah.
I really don't have a bad one.
No, you really don't. I particularly one that struck me.
Choices.
I can't remember the name of it, but you took a violent exception to Patty Hearst wearing.
Oh, that was Serial Mom. John Waters. He came last night.
After the
Labor Day. Absolutely not.
I thought taking a stand like that, I like.
Well, she had to die, didn't she?
Well, no, I mean, yes. Rightly so.
Yes.
But that was stuck in my mind.
God bless her.
This has been an ADST Oral History podcast. For more information on ADST or similar interviews and oral histories, please visit ADST.org. Thank you for listening.